Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Presented by Allied Home Security.
I thought the pass protection was good. I thought a couple of times that Tyrod came out of the pocket when he didn't really need to come out of the pocket. It looked like he had pressure when he really didn't have pressure, and he should have just stepped up in the pocket and made a couple of throws where he came out, and he ended up getting some positive yardage for that. But I thought overall pass protection was good for the most part in that game.
All right, so that was David Culley talking about the pass pro. It'll need to be good on Sunday. Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, Tack McKinley, they've got some guys that can get after it in that front seven for the Cleveland Browns. So, Seth, you made a couple of assessments. You did your rewatch of the game and your kind of film study of the Jacksonville game on Sunday. And the game on Sunday, you did the rewatch earlier this week, and you came in with evaluations on a few things. David Culley did his first media availability, real first media availability since he's had a chance to totally digest, I think, the win over Jacksonville. He was able to really give assessments of things. David Culley validated you twice yesterday, I thought, in his press conference.
It was probably his goal. He said, I'm going
to
go out there.
He listens to the show, and he said, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to go validate Seth Payne today. What was your assessment of Titus Howard on Sundays? Just to reset, your assessment of Titus Howard
game. The big one is that he hasn't adjusted to playing guard yet.
Right.
There were times where it was clear that he wasn't ready for the physicality of playing guard, and he got out physical, particularly in the second half. I think when the Jaguars knew that the Texans were definitely running the ball, Titus was losing some physical battles there. So But he did do some good things, but he's got to work on a few things.
Here is David Culley yesterday on Titus Howard and the left side of the line.
Titus needs to be better. I was happy with the way he played, but he can be better. Just like I said, our whole left side can be much better. We expect a bunch out of that side of the line of scrimmage, and I thought we were just okay there this past week, and expect us to be better.
Yeah, the left side of the line, too, is another thing we had talked about yesterday, where particularly in picking up some of the twists and stunts in games along the defensive line, it looked very clearly like, oh, Titus Howard is new to playing left guard, and Laremy Tunsil missed a whole bunch of time in the preseason with COVID. And he just they didn't have their timing, their communication, all those things down. I'm not overly discouraged because I think they'll get better. I thought that Laremy Tunsil did a pretty damn good job in one-on-one pass protection. When he was actually just on his own, it came down to the finer points of the game that they really need to hammer out.
Yeah, how quickly can that come together? Like, is that something that can improve quickly, or is that something that is going to be a slower burn because the two have not worked together a lot because of Laremy being out with COVID and whatnot?
If Titus Howard were a career left guard, I think it could come really quickly. But because the big wild card here is, okay, we don't even know if Titus is going to be a good guard or not. Some guys, yeah, I think there's a tendency sometimes to think, wow, if a guy's an okay tackle, then he'd be an awesome guard because guards aren't as good, right? It's not always that case at all. Sometimes guys that are better with the finesse side of things and the athletic side of things thrive on the outside, but they might lack the physicality to be good on the inside. We'll find out, and we'll see with Titus Howard whether he is or not. I think Laremy should come back pretty quickly. I think he just had to get his legs right. I mean, the guy was off trying to stay in shape by running in city parks this August wearing a mask. It's not like he's in football shape yet.
Right, right. All right. What was the other?
That's true. He was freaking little kids out.
Yeah.
You know when you're a man at a park. A lot of times you attack you attract watchful glances. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember taking my kid to the park when I was, when you're little, and they're off running somewhere, and all of a sudden you find that you're just the guy sitting at a park bench staring at the playground. People like look around like, hey, what's this guy up to? What are you, right. Like, I don't know. So I think I bet when Laramie Tunsil, monstrosity that he is, shows up and he's, you know, running wind sprints around the playground, people might be like, well, what's going on with this guy anyway? What's this guy's deal?
Yeah, yeah. It's probably directly proportional to the size of the individual that you are. You as a gigantic individual probably attracted more attention than a moderately sized person.
They're like, if this guy tries to abscond with one of my children, I'm pretty sure I could chase him down, but I'm not going to be able to tackle him.
Right, yeah. Once I get to him, it's going to be curtains for me, absolutely. So Titus Howard, so David Culley mirrored almost exactly what you said about Titus Howard. What was your assessment of Mark Ingram and the importance of Mark Ingram to this team? From this weekend.
That Ingram is validation of everything that Caserio and Culley have been talking about when it comes to competing, to being the right kinds of guys, to all of those things. Like, if you're going to establish a culture, and a lot of times I get sick of hearing that because so many coaches talk about it, but then they don't really know what they're doing. I think we've had recent history with that. But that when it comes to identifying dependable, tough, and smart players, Mark Ingram is exactly who you want. That's exactly the guy they're talking about. Like, he cares. Whenever you hear him mic'd up or anything, he's talking about his teammates. He's blowing his teammates up. He makes the absolute most out of the blocking that he has in front of him, you know, at least to the level of his abilities at his advanced age. That everything about Mark Ingram is exactly what you're looking for when it comes to establishing a certain kind of culture.
Here is David Culley yesterday on the importance of Mark Ingram.
The thing about him is that when I was with him in Baltimore, you know, he's probably one of the more vocal guys we have on this team. And he is not afraid to say what's on his mind. And those guys respect him. He's been around some winners. He knows what it's like to be a winner and be successful in this league. And he also knows that when adversity comes, somebody's got to be able to make sure that those guys understand that, you know, we got to be able to overcome those things. And he's one of those guys that you'll never see him down. You'll never see him let anybody else get down. And basically, I'm with him all the time, telling him about, you know, continue to do that. And like I said before, when we first got him here, I felt like he was a reflection of what I was all about as a coach and what I want out of our players. And I'm glad he's here.
Yeah, he's one of those players, Seth, that when we're in the summertime going through, okay, who do we think makes the roster? Who do we think doesn't make the roster? This and that. I hear that, and I watch Mark Ingram play this past Sunday, and I feel silly. I'm sure there was a segment somewhere along the way where I said, you know, Mark Ingram might not make this team. You know, all these running backs.
you talked a lot about how he would make the team, but maybe as trade bait for when, hey, maybe if Baltimore loses all three of its top running backs to injury, maybe they'll trade for Mark Ingram. And I don't know, at this point, Mark Ingram's... I'm such a sucker because I feel like I don't want to trade away Mark Ingram. And I would almost say at any price, but that would be the dumbest thing ever. There has to be a price for Mark Ingram, but I feel like it's higher than I would have said it was back on August 1st.
I feel like it's higher than I would have said it was before I watched the mic'd up with Mark Ingram from the game this past Sunday. Have you watched that yet? Have you watched?
Yes, I've watched the entire thing.
Okay, so you definitely want a first-round pick for Mark Ingram now if you've watched the Mike Tuck.
No, realistically, though, I think before the season I would have said, yeah, you know what, if you get a fifth-round pick for Mark Ingram, it would make sense. Baltimore loves him. He knows the system, all of that, maybe he would. I think I've pushed that upward because, again, if Caserio is trying to walk this balancing act between – you know, resetting the roster, thinking about the future, but also on the other side, trying to have the right kinds of guys. It's, you can't do it with only one or two of the right kinds of guys. I've seen coaches try to change the culture with one or two guys before, and it doesn't work. You got too many jackasses outweighing the one or two good guys. Mark Ingram's one of those guys that you want the younger guys to see and to model themselves after. And I don't know. It's at least a third-round pick at this point.
Wow,
I would want at least a third. A third.
Okay.
I don't think that's realistic.
Okay,
no.
Audience, listen and watch as I push Seth to a second-round pick for Mark Ingram with just about 20 seconds worth of audio.
Your presence on this football team, what you mean?
Yes, sir.
very important. It ain't just about yards. It's about having you here.
Yes, sir.
You got me?
Yeah, I love you, Coach.
That was David Culley on the sidelines with Mark Ingram on Sunday.
It ain't just about yards. It's about having you here.
Right.
You know, and you know, people have asked us a few times, hey, Seth, what's it like if you're trying to win as a player, but the front office is making moves that show that they're not trying to win? I think that that's something you live with as a player, and it's not ideal, but you're still ultimately in the NFL. The biggest motivator, really, realistically, is that if you don't do your job, you're not going to get paid. Yeah. You know, and that's not the stuff they write about in motivational books like Jack Easterby would want and everything. But that's the biggest. That's by far the most pressing motivator. Now, all the other stuff is talking about winning a championship culture and all of that. So yeah, like you maintain order simply by just keeping it competitive around there. But if you are genuinely trying to send the message that, hey, culture matters and we want this kind of guy here and this is the right kind of guy, then you can have a reason for trading Bradley Roby. Maybe he wasn't the right kind of guy. You don't have that. You've got the head coach on camera saying you are exactly the right kind
That's
of
right.
guy. It's hard to sell your message about culture if you trade away the guy that the coach has singled out as being the guy.
Adam Schefter reporting general manager Seth Payne is holding out for a package of 6 draft picks or players for Mark Ingram. He's looking for a Watson type of package for Mark Ingram.
I can't believe the Texans want that much for Deshaun Watson. But it makes sense. You know what? It makes sense that they hold out for a first rounder for Mark Ingram.
For Ingram, absolutely.
But what's the price? So what's the unrealistic, like a ridiculous price for Mark Ingram right now would be a second round pick.
Oh, that'd be absurd. I think that's honestly, Seth, he's an aging running back. A third is silly.
I know. So let's say, I know it is, but let's say they got a second round pick because of, have they talked themselves into a corner with Mark Ingram? If they're genuinely trying to teach and instill this culture, could they actually have to refuse a second round pick for Mark Ingram?
It's crazy. All right, is the AFC South
answer the question?
Well, we got to go to break. Is the AFC South?
Oh, you're getting up on a technicality. I'm giving you the chance to refute these allegations,
and I'm pleading the fifth. Yeah. Is the AFC South a stealable division for the Houston Texans? Next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Thursday. Texans and Browns on Sunday here on Sports Radio 610. Noon kickoff. Noon Sunday kickoff. When in doubt, assume it is a noon Sunday kickoff this year because that's when most of the games are for the Texans. So the Athletics, Seth, did a they do this every week. They kind of they rejigger the power ratings and the predictions for the season based on what's occurred. You know, so 1 week, small sample size, but 1 week into the season, they rerun all the simulations based on the intel that they now have through however much of the season has progressed.
And they're using this, so they're doing this with a computer.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, and it is they do what's called a distributed power rating. And the power rating part.
Sure. The DPR.
The DPR. Yes, yeah, right, exactly, right, right. You know what they're talking about. The audience may not know, but you know. They reproject the regular season and the average number of wins and losses that these teams get in all these simulations. Do you feel like that we are now looking at a Texans team that should average 7.2 wins in these thousands of simulations that they've done?
Wait
for this
a
season?
Second. Wait. So based on 1 week, all of a sudden the computer probably, I'm guessing, coughed up like an extra 3 wins or something over last week.
The computer is saying that the Titans and the Texans are the same team.
Oh, really?
7.2.
Oh, no,
the Titans have 7. Here's what the AFC South looks like, and this goes to the question I teased into it, is that based on the data we have now, and obviously looking ahead at the rest of the season because you're simulating everything, but now you're doing it with at least 1 week worth of reality. Colts, 8.6 wins. Titans, 7.2 wins. Texans, 7.2 wins. Jaguars, lowest in the league at 4.8 wins. So my question is the AFC South as stealable as these simulations are letting on right now?
I think that if there's one thing, I guess I'm a little skeptical. I'd have to know how many wins they projected last week. Yeah. Although, I think a lot of people, it was weird. It's weird because I think sometimes people assume it's easier to predict who the worst team in the league is going to be than it actually is. It's not always that simple. There's a whole lot of variability and luck that goes into it along the way. Like, it's, if you want to if your front office is intentionally trying to lose as many games as possible, you still might win 3 or 4 games. So, I think it's always been possible to win 7 games, 8 games maybe, but unlikely. But now you've got the computer saying that their average wins is about 7 plus wins, based on the fact that they actually looked competent in week 1. I think that it could be that the Colts might end up being way less imposing than people thought, based a lot on Carson Wentz, but also the fact that I think a lot of people were just kind of expecting the Colts defense to take another step forward because they'd shown so much promise and they have young talent. The Titans, for whatever improvements they tried to make on defense, I don't think they were actually all that impressive even on paper. And then on offense, you're looking at what might be a really big issue with having just flat out different offensive coordinator than Arthur Smith. I'm going to give the Titans a break offensively because the first thing I thought was, well, they barely ran any play action. Arthur Smith ran a ton of play action, and that was why Ryan Tannehill was so good. If you go back and look at that game, the Titans had really bad first downs, which put them in second and long situations a lot, at which point play action's not really worth it. If it's second and 10, like, teams aren't going to bite on the run the same way they do on second and 6 or second and 5. So there, it might just be a weird fluke of that game. We'll watch moving forward. But, yeah, I think that those two teams especially might not be as good as people thought. And then the Jaguars might be really, really atrocious yet again, where I think a lot of people thought just by virtue of Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence somehow that they'd take a light year step forward.
Yeah, here's what I'll tell you. I don't think the Texans are winning the division. I'm not here to tell you that. Although this simulation says they've got a 21% chance of winning the division after 1 week. You know, we'll see how it plays.
And a 25% chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah. No, hey, look, I am here for every week that we can talk like this reasonably about the Texans. Like, hey, dare to dream, that kind of thing. Here's where the first month of the season could get interesting. And I'm also not saying they're going to beat the Browns on Sunday. I don't think they're beating the Browns on Sunday. But this we know. The early part of the season is pretty forgiving for the Texans. It's the complete opposite of last year when they had 4 really hard games right out of the gate. They get they have the Jags last week at home. They get the Panthers on a short week at home next week. They get the Patriots with the rookie quarterback in week 5. It's not out of the question that this team is 3-2 after 5 games. To take that a step further and talk about the division and just how long can we reasonably have conversations about the Texans stealing what looks to be by far 1 week in the weakest division in football as it's been for most of the last several years. Here is the Colts schedule for the first 5 weeks. They play the Texans in week 6, I'll point out. The Colts schedule for the first 5 weeks. They lost to Seattle last week. They play the Rams this week. They play the Titans in Tennessee next week. They play the Dolphins in Miami the next week. They play the Ravens in Baltimore the week after that. Seth, the Colts could go 0-5. The Colts could start the season 0-5. They have the Rams at home and then three road games against teams that won double-digit games last year.
Hey, that's right where Frank Reich wants them. Remember his first year when they started off 1-5.
1-5, yeah, 1-5, yeah. And they made the playoffs.
Including one to the tech. Remember, he made the curious decision to go for it, and everybody and he said afterwards, "Nope, that's what I would do," and it worked out.
Here is the Titans schedule. They've got Seattle this weekend, the team that just beat the Colts. Then they play the Colts, as I mentioned. They got the Jets and the Jags, so that'll be something where they probably get straightened out. But they're both on the road, so we'll see. Then Buffalo, Kansas City, Indianapolis again, and the Rams, and then New Orleans. Now, those are all games they play before they play the Texans. So I say all this to say that the schedule is not easy for any of these teams. It's much easier for the Texans, who don't have any easy games because they're not a great football team. I'm just here to tell you that there's a very good chance that we're having conversations like this about the AFC South for at least a few more weeks because of what these other teams are facing. This is the worst division in football right now.
I think that the surprising thing about what this computer spit out in a good way was that it has the Texans as the 23rd most favored team to win the Super Bowl, which is so far above anything I ever saw at any point in the last
that's a massive
couple
jump.
Months. I mean, it's got the Lions as dead last, the Jets, the Falcons, the football team, the Jaguars, the Giants. Those teams all have a 0-point-something percent chance, according to this computer. Whereas the Texans have a 1% chance.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
I
think this computer is a little too. I think the computer is just basing all. It looks like some of these results are based on nothing except the first week results, and like it'll vary widely from week to week.
Yes.
At the top end of the spectrum, it's got a 15% chance of the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl, 14% for the Saints, who are a very talented roster with just a huge question. How about the Saints? The Saints might be as weird as the Texans in some respects in that they have an incredibly talented roster and a quarterback who's a question mark after having thrown 5 touchdowns in last week's game because he threw 5 touchdowns on like 110 yards passing.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, Jameis Winston can make some incredible throws. He's still very talented. The biggest question about Jameis Winston is still like, okay, has he somehow figured out a way to have better judgment
yet? Yep.
And we don't really know for sure based on last week.
Text message, I don't know about the weakest division being the AFC South. The NFC East has been abysmal lately. Hey, look, I don't even know if the NFC East is the worst division in the NFC. The NFC North is, I don't think the Packers are going to be as bad as they were in week one all year, but I don't think they're going to be as good as they've been the last couple years. The NFC North is trash. So just slow down before you talk. I mean, Cowboys might actually be good. They stood in with the Buccaneers and they were ahead with a minute to go in the game, and Washington's got a good defense and Philly looked good in week one. We'll wait and see. All right. 713-572-4610. We'll work some of you in here as we roll on a Thursday. Here on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. It's been a rough couple years for us here in Houston. Is this the best that we've felt about Houston sports since... ... I'll tell you, the best we felt since when? That's next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Been a long time since we actually had positive feelings about all three of the major teams here in town. Like, it's always been something over the last couple years. The Texans have had their fair share of drama, as we know. Really, honestly, heading all the way up to winning against Jacksonville on Sunday. And there's still a lot of work to do, obviously, with the Texans and getting people back on board with the Texans. But Sunday was a nice first step that I think has us at least feeling good for a week. The Astros, even amidst success on the field, have had their fair share of issues off the field with the punishment of the sign stealing. And the Rockets went from a team that was in the mix to go to the NBA Finals every year for the last half dozen years to a team that had completely turned over the roster other than Eric Gordon by the end of the season last year. So, Seth, I was thinking about this. Like, okay, all three teams, while two of the three are not positioned to win championships right now, I think at least the Rockets, I think for the long term, and the Texans at least for this week, the arrow is a green arrow pointed up. Like, okay, they beat Jacksonville. It's been more positivity than negativity, way more, for the last few days about the Texans. I think the Rockets, the summer league, and all these rookies have everybody pretty excited for what's going to be probably a difficult season, but at least one where you can see the direction they're going as something that's going to be very fun down the road. And the Astros are getting ready to go win the American League again, or at least play in the ALCS like they've done the previous four seasons.
Hey, what? Don't be negative. They're winning, okay?
They're going to win the whole thing.
Yeah, Rikidi's performance last night sealed it for me.
Put you over the top. Is this, I was thinking, okay, when was the last time we felt positively, like generally positive about all three teams? And I think it was probably the day after the Texans beat the Buffalo Bills in the playoffs back in early January of 2020. They beat the Bills.
Which is, yeah.
The Astros hadn't been punished yet for the sign stealing. Yeah. That was still a week away. And the Rockets, I looked up their record on that day. It was 24-11. They were really good.
Oh, gosh. I wish you hadn't reminded me about how all those things happen in such rapid succession. Mm-hmm. The loss to the Chiefs and the cheating scandal.
Yeah.
Because they lost to the Chiefs and then the cheating scandal results were the next day. Commissioner's report came out the very next day.
Next day.
So we barely had any time to mourn. Just like when the Astros won the World Series, a little tiny bit of the celebration was marred by the fact that Deshaun Watson tore his ACL.
Correct.
When it comes to the yin and the yang, it feels like things have kind of like these teams have moved in unison or opposite of each other sometimes.
Yep.
Right now, I don't know, Sean. I feel like it still feels pretty muted. I think there are a lot of people that are allowing themselves to feel good about last week's win.
Yeah.
Because they're in that stage where they're like, okay, you know what? I'm just gonna go. You only get 17 football games a year mm-hmm. in the NFL. I'm gonna enjoy this win and savor it, and then we'll worry about what comes later.
No doubt.
So I don't know if I'm really buying it as like, oh wow, people feel good about Houston sports.
Again, I'm just saying the best we felt since then. You know, it's always been something for the last nearly 2 years.
You still felt good about the Rockets in September of last year. Mm-hmm. I think in September of last year, let's say, let's say September 1st. When were the playoffs over in the NBA last year?
They drug into October.
September 1st, we were still feeling good about, I mean, we knew that it was a long shot, but we thought that Uber small ball might work out. We'll see. At least they're in the playoffs, they're in the bubble. And then, hey, all they got to do is find a stretch center for next year to complement Russell, and everything will be all fine, right?
Yep.
So there was that. The Texans, you didn't feel good about because we didn't know what the hell was going on.
Well, I'll say this.
With the front office, but there was still intrigue.
Well, and you used September 1st as the benchmark. Let's just make it September 5th for the sake of what I'm about to say. That was the day that Deshaun Watson signed his contract extension. That was a good day. Yeah. That was a fun day, you know? Like that was a day
and I think that
felt good.
For the most part, people were still angry and just flat out confused about the DeAndre Hopkins trade. But I think there was that feeling of, okay, well, it's put up or shut up time. This is it. Like, we knew last year was very much a referendum year on Bill O'Brien. It was going to be. We just didn't expect it to play out as quickly as it did.
Remember when it was layers and layers of players? Remember
that's
that?
Right, yeah.
That was the layers and layers of players era of Texans football.
I forgot about layers and layers of players.
Yeah, man.
Everybody, I guess it was because dependable, tough, and smart just superseded everything.
Which of those things, I was thinking about this earlier when you were talking about Mark Ingram being all of those things and then some.
Yeah. Dependable, tough, and smart.
Which was the thing that O'Brien was the worst at evaluating, do you think? Of those three things, was he the worst at evaluating dependable, tough, or smart?
Oh, I think it's got to be the dependable part. I think once he had in his brain that somebody was dependable, there was nothing you could do to dislodge that notion from his brain. And that's why And that is one of the reasons why Bill O'Brien was one of the ultimate worst choices to be a coach and general manager, because every coach has blind spots. I don't care who it is. If it's Bill Walsh, it doesn't matter. Every coach has blind spots, and usually it's one of the purposes of the GM to cover those blind spots and to have the tough, hard discussions with Bill O'Brien. I think he had a huge blind spot when it came to basically getting his appraisals of players stuck in his head and being inflexible off of them. So he felt like Nick Martin was a dependable player, no matter how many times Nick Martin would prove that he wasn't dependable. He thought that he thought his punt returner was dependable, even though his punt returner fumbled every other game. Like, all of these things, he didn't know the dependable side. I also think that I think he mistook fake toughness for toughness sometimes. Remember Bruno Giacomini?
I do.
O'Brien would not shut up about how tough Bruno Giacomini was. And, like, the only evidence I ever saw of Bruno Giacomini being tough was that after he would get his ass kicked in a football play, he would shove the guy in the back on his way to the quarterback.
Okay.
Like, he would just – or he'd jump on the pile afterwards.
That's
and I think
tough.
O'Brien thought that, like, hey, this guy's got an Italian last name, and he's jumping on guys – he's jumping on the pile and giving guys kidney shots. He must be tough. That's tough, right? I don't know. I went to a fancy New England prep school. And that's another thing, too. I think O'Brien, I still don't trust the fact that he went to a fancy New England prep school. I think a lot of O'Brien's kind of rough and tough demeanor was to make up for the fact that he went to a fancy New England prep school.
I think he overvalued attendance and punctuality. You know what I mean? Like, if you showed up at 5:30 to the building, that was dependable in Bill O'Brien's book. You know what I mean?
If O'Brien were like a boxing promoter, he'd be like, all right, we've got this guy. Boy, this one boxer is a badass. He's like, he's won all his fights. He's been to jail 3 times. He's got like scars all over his forehead. Who's gonna put up the best fight? Timmy, the Golden Gloves champ, who won the Good Samaritan Award 3 times in high school.
Right,
He's very dependable. He'll be tough. He'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah. Dependable is probably it. That's probably the one he had the toughest time evaluating. Let's go to the phones. Go to Dennis in Seabrook. Dennis, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Morning, man. How are you today?
Not bad, Dennis. How are you?
I'm real good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to talk a little bit about Farrell Brown. Last year, Farrell caught a couple of passes, and the guys were real high on him. This year, last week, he had a decent game, and it seemed to me like you guys were ready to call the Pope and have him anointed sainthood. And now he's hurt again. He hasn't practiced this week, which he'll be recovering to get for the game against the Browns. Just a little FYI, as you probably remember, I'm Kahali Waring's number one fan. His dad's a good friend of mine. And just an update, of course, he was hurt when Belichick let him go. His MRI proved that his hamstring was not in the best of shape, so Belichick didn't want to take the chance. They moved him over to Indianapolis. They said the same thing. Look how he got to Buffalo. He basically asked the GM, hey, are you guys going to cut me too? The response was, no, Kahali, we're going to get you ready because you're going to be in the Pro Bowl. And when he gets the Super Bowl ring this year, I want you guys to remember what I said.
Hi, Dennis. We appreciate the phone call.
Boy, it's a really boy. He really pulled himself up by his bootstraps there, didn't he? Well, I'll sit back here and laud the accomplishments of Kahali Waring. He's really arrived, has he not? Good for you, Kahali Waring. Some guy says that you're going to be awesome this year. Everybody said he couldn't do it, but he's gone and done it. He's done nothing. Okay, great. I have Kahali Waring. I don't care. Listen. Let me tell you something, everybody. You call up and tell me that you're buddies with some guy and you think I'm going to take it easy on you because you decided to call up and cheerlead? The last thing Kahali Waring wants is his daddy's buddy calling in to congratulate him on making his team finally for the 5th time this go-round in the offseason. Okay, good. Good for you. I'm glad. Boy, those high standards you set for Kahali Waring must be why he's thriving in the NFL the way he is.
Dennis,
Instagram model posing as a tight end. Damn water polo player scraping around, scratching each other beneath the surface of the water, acting like that's toughness. Yeah, good for you, Kahali Waring.
Didn't see you cutting a promo on Kahale Waring on the rundown today.
That can't possibly be somebody that actually knows Kahale Waring.
Why would you call a show and say you were friends with Kahale Waring's dad if you weren't friends with Kahale Waring's
dad? Because that's a good little lie to like kind of sell it as a thing. If you are friendly with a player or something, one of the worst things you can ever do is call in and give a bad take, because it's further. Like, listen, hey buddy, if you actually do have that relation to Kahale Waring, you just embarrassed Kahale Waring. Yeah. Like, that, you're the worst possible friend you could ever possibly be. You should be ashamed of yourself. You should not eat for 3 days. Henceforth, from this moment, I demand that you go on a 72-hour fast as reparations for the harm you've done to Kahale Waring's good name. You should be ashamed of yourself. Pathetic. God. Hey, let me tell you something about Kahale Waring. Let me tell you something. Was he cut by three teams in the course of 26 hours? Of course he was. But you know what? You know what happened after that? The very guy who drafted him decided to throw him a bone. And now he's basically the MVP.
The loyal listener, Dennis, he's just sticking up for his guy, Seth. That's all he's doing.
No, he did it with a told you so. He did it with a told you so.
All right.
He doesn't listen either. All right. Is that the guy? Is that the water polo guy that yells
it? He said
you guys must know by now. Like, I have no idea who that guy is. Who the hell is that guy?
I know that In the Loop has a water polo sycophant that calls in and takes up for Kahale Waring. I'm not sure if Dennis is that same guy. I'm not sure. Landry or John, if you're listening, text the show and let us know if that's the same person. All right. So Kahale Waring, last thing before we get to headlines, Dennis, you're going to need to actually put something on the line if you're calling Kahale Waring making the Pro Bowl. Like, one of these things, like, if he doesn't make the Pro Bowl, then you need to do something completely embarrassing in public. Just think about that and then call back in.
Did he say he'd make the Pro Bowl?
Yes!
Or is he saying he'd,
He said the bit when Kahale Waring gets a Super Bowl ring. Ben, pull the audio just so we can look back at it.
I was Kahale Waring's biggest fan.
You were.
Early on.
You were. He said when Kahale Waring gets a Super Bowl ring in Buffalo and he's making the Pro Bowl, .. And then he scooted out of here. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, we start with the Astros, who won last night 7-2 over the Texas Rangers. They close out the series tonight. They'll try to take 3 out of 4. The Chicago White Sox lost, so the lead over the White Sox for home field advantage in the inevitable ALDS against the White Sox is a 2-game lead, and the Astros have the tiebreaker from their head-to-head record against the White Sox. So that's the big story. I guess the other story coming out of yesterday, Seth, that we've not touched upon, but we should, because he's been the best hitter in baseball, at least by batting average, for most of the year, is Michael Brantley to the injured list. We did not talk about that earlier in the show. Now, it looks like it's just something the Astros are doing cosmetically to keep as many roster spots open as possible, because they are retro dating it 3 days back, so he should only be on the injured list for 7 days. He's got some soreness in one of his knees, but there will be no Michael Brantley in this lineup for the next week.
Right.
You nervous about Michael Brantley's health?
No, I'm not. He has to be managed very carefully at his advanced age. Yeah. That's no big deal. I think he'll be fine come playoffs. Just like Bregman, you're being very careful with Bregman. Everything right now is you're on that delicate march towards the playoffs, where you want to compete, you want to try to get that home field over the White Sox for the ALDS, but you got to be ready to compete when you actually get there. So I think that Brantley will be just fine. There was nothing happened last night that concerns me on the same level as Greinke struggling the night before. Right. And quite the opposite, actually. Urquidy was very, very good. The biggest thing about Urquidy, the important thing about Urquidy, was that he maintained his velocity through the entire evening. He didn't show any signs that he was still having a hard time getting back in shape or getting ready to go deeper into games. So Urquidy now right in that conversation, amongst who should your top four starters be in the playoffs?
Yeah, here's Jose Urquidy on how he's feeling physically right now.
I'm good right now. You know, I was out for 2 months, and that's hard coming and throw a big league game. You see in the first game after my injury, I was a little losing with my command, with the catcher. But right now, I feel more comfortable. I mean, I throw a lot of bullpens. I got two games already after the injury, and I got more confident right now. I got more consistently pitches in the zone, and that's me. I'm working on it, and I'm better right now.
So Urquidy, he struggled in his first start back last week against the Mariners. I was at that game. That was the afternoon game against the Mariners last week. He looked really good yesterday, feeling the way he felt pre-injury. Getting a healthy Jose Urquidy back. Seth, we forget, like, these guys who are young pitchers, who are maybe regular season-wise getting into some uncharted territory innings-wise, these guys have pitched in important games. Like, Luis Garcia is technically a rookie who's pitched in the postseason already in his career. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Jose Urquidy has pitched in big games for 2 years now.
The benefit of last year especially was that all these young guys that came into the season, the biggest question wasn't whether they could perform in the playoffs or whether they were good or anything. It was just how deep could they go. That's something we're still trying to figure out with Luis Garcia. Just how much can you trust him deep into a season in which he's pitched more innings than he's ever pitched before? I think Luis Garcia and Odorizzi are kind of at opposite ends of the spectrum. They're both being limited, but one, it's because, boy, you think that he might be able to handle it, but you got to be extra careful. The other is like, okay, we think we might be able to handle it, but it might also be a disaster. With Odorizzi, it's that, like, all right, they've been managing him closely and carefully, but now he's banged up, obviously. But they didn't want him to go more than two times through the order because it's just been disastrous afterwards. With Luis Garcia, I think he's proven that he probably can go much deeper into games, but they got to be extra careful because they want to be sure that he doesn't get fatigued before the playoffs because he's never pitched this much before.
I think it's a good point. I would add to that I think that, and this is probably more of a James Click thing than it is a Dusty Baker thing. Look, Dusty Baker might not be here after this year, but I think with Garcia, they've always got to take, and I would say this, I would apply this to Fromber and I would apply this to Urquidy as well, is that you've always got to be looking at their usage, not just at what it means for 2021, but what it means for 2022 and 2023 and 2024. Like, these are going to be guys who are going to be foundations of your starting rotation at relatively cheap prices, too, for the next 3 or 4 years. So I would add that element of it with Garcia, which is they've got their eye on more than just the next 2 months with guys like that. All right, the Texans, they play the Browns this Sunday. David Culley met with the media yesterday. Here are David Culley's thoughts on the Texans' opponent this Sunday, the Cleveland Browns.
Well, I mean, you know, they've got a defensive end there that's a pretty good player in this league. And they also have Clowney, who are two good rushers, you know, Garrett and he. It's a defense that I think has got a bunch of new players this year that they brought in. And I thought in this past game that we're watching the video of the Kansas City game, I thought they did a really nice job in that game of containing a very, very good offensive football team. And then offensively, they got a lot of weapons. You know, they got a very good quarterback. They got probably the two best combo running backs in the game. They got guys that they got skill all over the place and a very good offensive line. It's a big challenge. We kind of look at those guys as we talk about during the course of the year. You're going to play teams that are what you consider like playoff caliber teams, guys that have been there, guys that are expected to be there, teams that are. And we feel like we're playing one of those teams this week.
Okay. You know, I didn't catch it the first time I'd listened to that, Sean, but I choose to interpret this as subtle heat towards Jadeveon Clowney. He said they got a guy there who's a really good defensive end. They also have Jadeveon Clowney.
I didn't notice that either. That's great.
Because at first, obviously Myles Garrett is the better of those
two
players.
But
first, when I started listening, in my mind I was thinking he was talking about Clowney because Clowney had been here and all that. That's one of the obvious storylines going into this game. But he said, no, they've got a really good defensive end, and they also have Jadeveon Clowney.
That is how if you were intentionally trying to throw shade at Clowney, that is what you would do. I mean, it was I don't think Culley has that club in his bag, but it was a nice thing to stumble into.
You know, for the most part, Clowney steps up in emotionally charged games, whether it's a primetime game, playoffs, except for the Colts playoff game a couple years ago where the entire defensive line was bad. It was really weird. It was like somebody who put carbon monoxide in the D-line meeting room or something. Clowney does have a tendency to show up in games that maybe matter a little bit more. So I wonder if I would imagine he's probably particularly motivated, even though all the people that were here when he was here are pretty much gone by now. It's still the team that let him go. watching that game last week, Pat Mahomes was able to elude Clowney and Clowney's backup, Tack McKinley, a few times pretty well with his mobility. And Pat Mahomes isn't as mobile as Tyrod Taylor, but both Clowney and Tack McKinley are stiffer guys. They're like really explosive, fast guys, but they're kind of stiff. And versus athletic quarterbacks, if it's just them one-on-one in the open field, the athletic quarterback has the advantage. So I think that there will be some interesting moments in this game where Tyrod Taylor is out on the edge alone versus Jadeveon Clowney. And I think there's probably a lot of Texans fans that are obviously hoping that Clowney looks very stiff in those moments.
Do you so you think that's something that they try to exploit, the Texans, or is that something that is Tyrod Taylor – you know, if he has to escape the pocket, then that's something that improv-wise he can exploit.
Yeah, I think improv. I think it's if he's escaping the pocket. Because if you're trying to exploit it with a bootleg or something, Clowney's a smart football player. So, Clowney, you know, as goofy as he might seem off the field at times, he diagnoses plays pretty well. He'll make some mistakes, but usually if he makes mistakes, it's in the first quarter when he loses contain, and then he figures it out later on. So, you know, and I think a lot of Texans fans will remember, you know, like various times where maybe he lost contain. A lot of those were in the first quarter. So maybe the Texans should uncork something in the first quarter. Some kind of misdirection or bootleg or what have you. And then use it once, but he usually is pretty good at learning from his mistakes after that.
All right, here's some updates on some of the Texans who didn't play in week one. Charlie Heck was the starting right tackle, the first string right tackle. For most of training camp, he missed the first game with a positive COVID test. Here's the update on Charlie Heck.
We're expecting Charlie back this week. We'll just see where Charlie is this week. And, you know, being out with COVID, you know, there's some stamina issues right there that we have to be aware of. But we'll kind of see how it is. I think we hopefully will have him back for practice tomorrow and Friday and just kind of see where it's at. And then just keep rotating those guys the way we've been rotating.
All right, so that's Charlie Heck update. Here's the update on Anthony Miller, slot receiver, who's been dealing with a shoulder issue.
Well, we'll just kind of see in practice how things are. You know, whether he'll be active or not, we don't know yet. We'll just have to see in practice. But he is physically ready to go.
All right, so that's Anthony Miller. Lonnie Johnson was back at practice. The caller mentioned earlier, the one that came in and took up for Kahale Waring, did mention something that we had not touched on. Farrell Brown did miss practice yesterday. It was listed as a knee and a shoulder. Now, he was also on our station on Tuesday doing an interview. And he seemed pretty affable and ready for Cleveland. You remember he gave out the betting advice 2 days ago about take the 12 point. He didn't say this. He was led to that question by Ron the Show Hughley in fairly nefarious fashion show. If you're listening, I loved it. My guess is Farrell Brown's playing, or else he wouldn't be out there doing interviews and talking mess about the Browns. But we'll see. So Seth, you have Charlie Heck and Anthony Miller, both guys who probably at various points in training camp thought, man, I'm going to get my big break with the Texans. And they both wind up on injured lists of different varieties, and they both might get patrioted by Marcus Cannon and Danny Amendola. They are going to get Wally Pipped by former Patriots here right now, it looks like.
Yeah.
Which I don't have a big Amendola problem with, because they both played. Cannon and Amendola had good games in week one.
Yeah, Amendola, I guess it wasn't a surprise, because Amendola has been kind of churning out steadily the same performance when he's healthy the last few years. He was just doing it in Detroit the last couple of years. He almost looked – did it not look like his uniform didn't fit him quite right? He's usually really put together, you know, like he's very put together physically. Like in the off season, he's always wearing, he's with like a supermodel wife or girlfriend or whatever he has and all that. But he looked a little bit sloppy. I was a little disappointed with his actual physical presentation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because he got there like 3 days beforehand and they hadn't tailored his jersey and everything.
So you think
that's how it shows you like how quick a signing and turnaround to getting him out on the field was.
So you think that the tailors for the Texans need to do a better job of getting Danny Amendola fitted for his jersey this Sunday?
They did fire the entire equipment staff this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
So the crack staff that Easterby brought in, I don't know, maybe they don't work fast enough. We'll
maybe
see.
Not. Maybe
That's
not.
That'll be our big scandal.
Four things to watch for. Danny Amendola's jersey.
Things we're going to attack today. We're going to attack Kahale Waring for weird reasons.
Yeah.
And we're going to attack the new equipment managers. Yeah.
All right. Thursday Night Football. Tonight, it's the Giants and the Washington football team. when you get Daniel Jones and Taylor Heineke in prime time, you don't walk, you run to the television to watch that game. The big thing with this game tonight, Seth, is apparently, and I have not seen a leak on what this news actually is, so if it's out there, forgive me. Maybe you've seen it, Seth. But apparently at halftime of the game tonight between the Giants and the football team, there is going to be an announcement about the future of the Hard Knocks series, per a league official. Now, obviously, yeah, it's not going to be an announcement that Hard Knocks is no longer, even though I think the viewership has declined over the last few years. I doubt that they would tease a big announcement and say, we're canceling it. That would probably be more of just send out a press release. So what do we think this big announcement about Hard Knocks is? What could it be?
It's probably going to be, I don't know. Is it going to be a season-long thing, I guess?
That's what I'm thinking.
Is that what it could be? Nothing on network. If they're trying to recapture some of the buzz that Hard Knocks used to have, they're not going to get it back just because the landscape has changed. You know, people don't tune into the same thing all the time anymore, except for the actual sporting events themselves. That's why advertisers love sports, live sports so much, because that's the one thing that they know more, like most people don't DVR their way through, because you can't when you're watching it live. But when it comes to recorded shows like Hard Knocks and everything, there'll probably be something pretty cool they do with it. I just don't know if it merits a huge announcement at halftime, like it's the final episode of MASH or something.
Well, I mean, it's the league, it's their product. They're gonna over promote it. We'll wait and see what it is, and then say, okay, did that deserve this sort of promotion or this sort of tease? It's basically all I've seen teased is a tweet by Adam Schefter saying that the announcement is going to get made per a league official. I'll say this about Hard Knocks: just if they were to make it an in-season thing as opposed to just the preseason, the preseason version has become very formulaic. You know what I mean? It's, okay, these are your three or four guys who are probably not going to make the team, who are going to get emotionally invested in. This is the episode where they cut a bunch of guys. The last 20 minutes is always whatever preseason game they were playing in. It's become kind of cookie cutter. If you did it during the regular season with the right teams, really with any team, I mean, every team's got storylines during the regular season that are totally different than preseason storylines. I think it's got potential.
So if it's and they're doing it at halftime of the Giants and the Washington football team, nothing gets clicks and views and ratings quite like the NFC East, just because they're these old NFL teams with monstrous national fan bases, or they're in the Northeast. They just have huge cities supporting them. Yeah, maybe it is going to be something like either in season, or one of our listeners suggests that they're going to put it on YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook Live, something like that. They're making that transition to a streaming platform.
Does that feel like something you'd announce at halftime and tease a big announcement about? Like, format that 10% of you use, you know, right now to watch games.
What could they possibly do that would merit, like, leaking this? You don't want to miss this at halftime. I feel like they're setting themselves up for mockery no matter what happens. There's almost nothing they could announce that's going to actually make people feel like, wait a second, I stuck around for halftime for this.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe announcing they're doing it in season and then attaching an actual team to it. Like, we're going to be following Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers around all season long. I'd be like, oh crap, yes, I am here. I will watch that every week.
Somebody says maybe Hard Knocks will go to multiple camps rather than focusing on one team. It would be, interesting if the NFL basically made every team do it.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
When Hard Knocks was in Houston, man, I loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. I loved those things. And I'm obviously, with a very biased opinion, I thought it was the best Hard Knocks it ever was. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of unbiased people did think that it was a good one because Bill O'Brien was such a colorful character. But, yeah, there is something about being able to see those dramas unfold. You know, like Charles James, if it weren't for Hard Knocks, nobody in this town would really even remember Charles James other Correct. Than some hardcore fans. Yep. He'd be a guy that, oh yeah, I remember Charles James. Then they have him play running back once or something, and it'd be a nice little story, but it wouldn't be the personality that he is right now if it weren't for Hard Knocks. So that's what I'll put my money on. It's going to be some kind of expansion on the number of teams that are doing it, which would be kind of a coup because teams hate doing Hard Knocks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.